if you had somebody who was a cybersecurity expert on your board and they aren't on the committee that oversees cyber, it actually did nothing to benefit your cybersecurity performance score. However, if you then put them on the committee that oversees cyber, you saw a giant gain in your cybersecurity performance score. So what that meant to us was you can't just, you know, add board member and stir.
Yeah.
they need to have a leadership role.
Yeah, deal
they need
done.
To be in charge.
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkoff.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm really excited to welcome Dottie Schindlinger from Diligent. If you know Dottie, she has a lot of fans, and I was really honored that she would join us here on the podcast to talk about a really fascinating Diligent study that was recently released on cybersecurity. But Dottie, first off, welcome and thank you. Everything I get to do with you and the Diligent team is always an honor.
Michael, thank you so much for having me. I have to say it's such a pleasure to be on your show. I know we had you on our Corporate Director podcast a few months back and it was such a good conversation. So thanks for returning the invitation.
Well, I owe you, but let me just put a plug in besides for Dottie. The Corporate Director podcast is one of the best, and I listen to it religiously. And frankly, the idea for this podcast came from me listening to your podcast about this.
That's very flattering.
It's a fun show. Dottie makes it fun, and they got great music to start off. And they always have a really poignant discussion. So I would urge everybody, it's called the Corporate Director Podcast, and it's put out by Diligent. And we are big fans of Diligent, and we work with Diligent in a number of areas. And Dottie is one of our regular sort of go-to partner there. But before we go on, Dottie, I have to just give a little bit of background on you, because I found out, by the way, and I just told Dottie this, that she went to the University of Pennsylvania like I did, but I went
fighting Quakers.
Yeah, fighting, I know, which is almost an oxymoron.
It is.
And then let's just say this. I went a little bit before her time, okay? I graduated before her time. But there were still streets and when I went and there were cars. So in any event, Dottie, welcome again. But let me just give a little background. Dottie is the executive director of Diligent Institute, the global corporate governance research arm of Diligent. And Diligent is the largest SaaS software company in the governance, risk, compliance, GRC, and ESG space. She co-authored the book, Governance in the Digital Age, a great book, a guide for the modern corporate board director. She co-hosts, like I said, the Corporate Director podcast and co-created Diligent Institute's certification programs for directors and executives, including AI ethics and board oversight, which we participated in with Dottie, and we were very honored to do so. She was a founding team member of the tech startup Board Effect, acquired by Diligent in 2016. Like I said, she graduated from the University of Pennsylvania, go Quakers, and is a fellow of the Salzburg Global Seminar Corporate Governance Forum. Welcome, Dottie. But one other thing, Diligent's Elevate Conference is coming this fall in September, and I'll get to see Dottie in Houston. I would urge everybody to take a look at the program. The agenda's up, and it's a great program, always great discussion. And I love Diligent just because they're sort of high level thinkers. But welcome again, Dottie.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
So, Dottie, let's get into this cybersecurity report. I think it's a big deal. And I think the reason why I thought it was important, and let me just sort of set the stage and then we can talk about the report itself, is, you know, last year, when every study, survey, whatever in the compliance and governance field has always identified recently cybersecurity as the most significant risk that corporations face and particularly corporate boards. And all of this was compounded, in my view, with the adoption of the SEC cybersecurity disclosure rules that came out that really even raised the risk level even higher. And For that reason, I've tended to spend a lot more time on cybersecurity. And one other trend that we've seen, and I think you're probably aware of this as well, is there seems to be a growing partnership in cybersecurity risk management with the compliance team. And that's a natural partnership. I've seen it work in various organizations very well. So I see those three trends, and I want to sort of get your perspective on that and what, you know, you're seeing. And you're, you know, I know you're very focused on the board level, but I know that you're looking at governance in general. But what's your perspective on that?
Well, I mean, it's a really good segue, Michael, because those were some of the main reasons why we wanted to do this report. I mean, one of the things that we've been tracking is the kind of expanding remit of the audit and risk committee, or just the audit committee, depending on the structure of the board. And every year we do this report called What Directors Think. And we always ask a question of what's on the top of minds of directors, what's at the top of the board agenda for the year. And cybersecurity generally comes in as either the number one or the number two answer. Right. And then we always ask a question of what area of risk do you find the most challenging to oversee as a director? And cybersecurity is always at the top of that list. And so we wanted to start to ask some questions about what might actually be working in terms of board oversight of cybersecurity, and what would be some takeaways that boards and senior management teams, chief compliance officers, chief information security officers, risk officers could take to really make some changes that would be beneficial to their organization. So well, that was sort of the impetus for the report.
That's a great setup for this. And I'm going to get to the report in one second, but I want to sort of give one other anecdote and see what you think about this. This is right in the core of this issue. So I'm working with a client and cybersecurity is their number one risk. And, you know, part of our recommendations was, look, the board has to engage more on this and take more of an active role in the oversight and monitoring of this issue. At the same time, we were trying to tell the technical people, the chief security, you know, information security officer, you also have to change your language and speak to the board in a more understandable way. Because let's be honest, you're not going to find cybersecurity consultant experts, all 12 or 15 or 20 of the board members. And so what we found is that there's sort of a meeting of the minds that is starting to occur where people, the CISOs, are going to have to speak more candidly and relate better technical issues, and the board has to take more responsibility. And what I saw was that the board understood this immediately and responded. So I think that means that we're on a mission, and I know Diligent's on a mission about elevating this issue.
I totally agree. I mean, so for a long time, I feel like there's been this chasm between the information security team and the board. And to your point, part of it is I think CISOs are spending all day, every day thinking about very technical things. And so sometimes when they speak, it's a little bit jargony. It may have some underlying assumptions that board members don't share because they don't come from a cybersecurity background. And by the way, we'll talk about the findings of the report, but we know that almost no board members come from a cybersecurity background. And that's true globally. But the other issue is that a lot of chief information security officers don't necessarily have a good line of sight to what's happening in the boardroom. Traditionally, it wouldn't be the CISO coming into the boardroom. It would be the CIO. And at least for a lot of American companies, the CISO often reports to the CIO. So often they're, even though they've got a chief at the front of their title, they might not really be seen as an actual member of the C-suite. And so sometimes what happens is you've got a CISO who just doesn't really know what does the board actually need to know. So they might come in with a lot of data about how they're thwarting attempts to get onto the network and, you know, how many intrusions did they stop this month and that sort of thing. And it's not really information that the board can do anything with. It's not at a level that the board can ask strategic questions about. So what you need to have is almost this meeting of the minds to discuss, okay, what are the things that we actually need to monitor as a board? And then can you please make sure to address your comments to us in a form that is something we can actually act on, something that we can actually do something about?
Terrific way to describe. The other issue I would bring up to this is I've seen some board members say, well, are we okay? Just please tell me we're okay.
Right.
You know?
And how do you answer that question as a CISO?
Exactly.
I mean, especially if you've spent that entire morning trying to thwart a ransomware attack and it was the 15th that month.
I agree. I agree. So let's go to this report because I think this is a perfect segue into this. And I would urge everybody, we'll put in the show notes a link to the report put out by Diligent and your partner BitSight. And it's Cybersecurity Audit and the Board. How does board oversight impact cybersecurity performance? Right in the sweet spot. And, you know, when I read this and I first off heard your podcast on it, I was just fascinated by it. And I thought it was just terrific. And I'm not going to go through the methodology or anything like that. I want to just get to the key findings and sort of kick them back and forth with you. But I would urge everybody to really get a copy of this. So let me start with probably the first key finding, and I think you're probably well familiar with this. It says, companies with advanced security ratings create nearly four times the amount of value for shareholders as company with basic security ratings. And the reason, just to pontificate a little bit more, Dottie, is this to me is a value add, a return on investment, an ROI. And I always say companies that are ethical and have effective compliance programs perform better in the marketplace. And what you're saying is the same thing,
right,
with regard to cybersecurity and board oversight.
This We're saying means, here's the data.
Yeah. This to me is a board worthy. This should be put on the chair of every board member to read this before a board meeting. So fill us in a little bit on that and why you see that as so significant.
So it's a really important point, and I know we don't want to go too deep into the methodology, but I do think just a little bit of background on how we conducted the analysis is important. So just to kind of lay it out here, this was not based on a survey. Basically, what we did was take a look at a data set of about 4,150 companies, so over 4,000 companies from all around the world. We looked at indices from Australia, Canada, France, Germany, Japan, the United Kingdom, and the US. And so we looked at this set of public companies. And we took the data from those public companies to see a number of different things, including what was their committee structure? So could we kind of take the data and parse it and figure out, was there a committee that was charged with overseeing cybersecurity? Then we looked to see about their board composition. So who's on the board and what skill sets do they have? And we did some analysis to figure out, did they have a current and former chief information security officer on the board? Did they have a current or former CEO or CIO? Or a CTO of a cybersecurity company. So we sort of considered those board members cybersecurity experts. Then we took that data set, and our partners at BitSight provided a second data set, which was an overlay of what are the cybersecurity performance scores of those companies. Then we looked at that and compared and contrasted all that data to see, were there any patterns? One of the patterns that leapt off the page at us was that the companies that had the highest cybersecurity performance scores, meaning they're doing a lot to protect the company, protect the data, make sure their customer data is good, et cetera, that group of top performers was creating four times the shareholder value of the bottom performers. The bottom performers were doing far, far worse. It's maybe not going to be such a surprise that top performers also tend to be the most highly regulated companies. So think those in the financial services industry, right. Think those in healthcare. These types of organizations that have to comply with a lot of different compliance regulations, they're just doing better on cybersecurity performance, quite frankly, because they have to, in order to comply with regulatory compliance. So there's a couple of things that I think are interesting. One is, I hate to say it, but regulation clearly works.
Right. No.
It works.
The response. No. But it also changes your risk profile. And for example, a cybersecurity breach. Look, we just saw it in the healthcare sector. So to me, your observation is right on target with healthcare, financial, of course, for obvious reasons. These are all companies that are going to get hit with serious liabilities had they not done this. But the liabilities for a manufacturing company, I'm sorry, are still significant.
For sure. And to say, like, it's not just the liability. As we can see in the data, you're actually getting a shareholder value creation gain if you do this work. And so even if you're not, highly regulated, this is an argument in favor of cleaning up your house. You know, this is an argument in favor of really tightening how you oversee cyber and making it a much more rigid process.
And just to go a little bit more into it, was the finding specifically that the total shareholder return is approximately 372% and 91% higher, respectively, than their peers in the basic security performance range.
Right.
This is over 3 years and over 5 years.
So over 3 years, the top performers made 372% more TSR than the bottom performers. And over 5 years, it was 91% higher. And by the way, that's really significant because think about the last 3 years and the last 5 years. This has been one of the most turbulent times in the market in recent memory. And so we're saying even with the market volatility, even with a global pandemic, the organizations that had the highest cybersecurity performance scores outperformed the bottom performers by 4x. I mean, it's really night
and day. That is amazing. Yeah. So let's go on to finding number two. That is really, I mean, we could end the whole podcast right on that, but to me, there's still more. Which is companies with a specialized risk or audit committee had higher security performance ratings on average. I've always said I'm worried about audit committees and how much they have to take on, but also just anecdotally, seeing more companies considering a separate risk committee. Now, how does that all play into this, Dottie? And what about the finding, if you can help us with that?
I'm happy to. I mean, so this was actually one of the key questions we were trying to answer, right? Because for a long time now, there's been a lot of conversation about where does cybersecurity live? Should it live in a specialized risk committee? Should it live with the audit committee? And we wanted to know, does it make a difference? And the truth was, it didn't really make much of a difference. In fact, when the audit committee oversaw cyber or a specialized risk committee oversaw cyber, they were within a percentage point of each other in terms of their ability to oversee cyber well. What made a big difference was if you had a board where there was no committee oversight of cyber, meaning they're just handling it at the full board level, they're doing a much worse job. That's not maybe so surprising because think about all the things that are on a board's plate. They have to just think about every area of risk. So not just cyber, they're thinking about things like supply chain risk and talent risk. And they're thinking about what's changing with the global economic picture and geopolitics. And they're thinking about things like climate change. And it's a huge list of risk areas. And so if you don't have a dedicated committee going deep to really understand what's happening with cyber, it's probably not getting a whole lot of time or attention. And so what we're saying is if you don't dedicate this to a committee, you're not going to perform as well.
And I think that makes total sense, given the importance of cybersecurity. My one concern is audit committees are under a lot of burdens, as we say. But on the other hand, they're really good at managing risks and these types of risks. I mean, that's really, it depends on your sort of your functioning audit committee and whether or not you even have a separate risk committee or should you set up another one. But to me, the most important finding, though, is that you perform when you put it in a specialized committee of whatever sort, risk or audit, that you're going to get a better result. And that makes sense because the full board just doesn't have the bandwidth to do this, particularly these days.
I also think it's a sort of feather in the cap of audit committees. I agree with you. I mean, the number of things on their plate has just become a little unwieldy. And so in some cases, there are organizations that are splitting off maybe a separate risk committee or a separate cyber committee. I think that very much depends on the type of company that you are and your industry and your stage of development. You know, let's face it, if you are a data service company, you should absolutely have a data privacy committee. I mean, there's just sort of no question, right? If you are in healthcare, you should have a risk and safety committee, right? There's certain things that just make sense depending on your industry. I think what we found in the report, though, was as long as it's very clear which committee is overseeing cyber risk and they're putting that same rigor to overseeing cyber risk that they would other areas of risk, you're probably going to be just fine. That was sort of a reassuring bit of information out of this report.
Terrific. So now let's go to your third headline, and that is having a cybersecurity expert on the board is not enough. And so I like that headline. But on the other hand, just to take a moment, the cybersecurity rules that came out of the SEC at first was going to require disclosure of expertise by board members, who has and who doesn't. That was dropped. But nonetheless, I think you have to address the expertise issue in your disclosure if you're a public company. But where do we go with and how do we dovetail that sort of background on the SEC regulation? But more importantly, on what does this mean when you're saying the cybersecurity expert on the board is not enough?
Yeah, this was a very interesting and kind of unexpected finding that came out of this analysis. First of all, let me just level set. only 5% of companies in our data set have anyone on the board that we would consider a cybersecurity expert. So,
which
and
is
again,
really
our,
low.
Which really is low. Fun. Really low. And by the way, this includes like all the major indices, the biggest tech companies on earth, even they do not have a cybersecurity expert on their board. And to be clear, we were pretty rigorous in terms of our definition of what we considered a cybersecurity expert. You had to have professional experience as either a CISO, or you had to be a CEO or a CIO or a chief technology officer of a cybersecurity company before we consider you an expert. So it's a very low number. But what was really fascinating was that if you had somebody who was a cybersecurity expert on your board and they aren't on the committee that oversees cyber, it actually did nothing to benefit your cybersecurity performance score. However, if you then put them on the committee that oversees cyber, you saw a giant gain in your cybersecurity performance score. So what that meant to us was you can't just, you know, add board member and stir.
Yeah.
They need to have a leadership role.
Yeah, deal
done. They need to be in charge.
Deal done. We have Mike on the board who's a, you know, is a technical geek. And so therefore we have it. You don't. What you're saying is there's more to the mix that has
Correct.
To be operationalized from that expertise.
Correct. You have to give them some line of sight over the actual risk matrix and over the actual approach to cyber risk management. And then if they're in that position, then you see a big gain in your score. And just to give an example here, the companies that had a cybersecurity expert on committee that oversaw cyber had an average security performance score of 700, mm-hmm. whereas the companies that have a cybersecurity expert, but that person isn't on a committee, their rating was 580, which is kind of in the bottom tier. So it was a pretty big difference.
That's really interesting. Well, let's go on to our last finding, but this one you already referenced early on when we talked about the 4x shareholder value, but highly regulated industries tend to outperform other industries in terms of cybersecurity performance. You mentioned already financial services, but you also mentioned healthcare companies, which I think makes total sense. But what's the nature of this finding? And just to put a little more meat on the bones of this general issue that you discussed in the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, we were really interested to see, okay, who are these top performers? You know, what is this group of companies that is in the top echelon of cybersecurity performance score? And do they have anything in common? And when we really looked at them, what we noticed was that they were all in highly regulated industries. A full third of them came from financial services with an average rating of about 720. The sector that had the highest average overall rating was healthcare. Now, just to put that in context, we are talking about publicly traded healthcare companies, right? So these may not necessarily be nonprofit hospitals that are at great risk of ransomware and are really being hit hard with ransomware. I mean, a lot of these institutions are not well resourced and they struggle. These are publicly traded companies in the healthcare space. So some of these are big pharma companies. They tend to be very highly regulated. They tend to have a lot of compliance requirements. And, you know, at least according to this data set, they are doing pretty well on cyber. You know, they are really outperforming on cyber. Now, we looked at the bottom performers too, and nearly a quarter of the companies with basic security performance ratings came from the industrial sector. And the sector that had the lowest overall performance was the communications sector. And other than, you know, other than like the FCC, they're not really, you know, not really kind of getting the kind of scrutiny that a financial services company or a healthcare company would get around management of data. Think about it, right? The specific sort of management of data piece. Think about how HIPAA plays in for, you know, these big healthcare companies or PSSDII plays in for the financial services sector, right? And it's that kind of regulation that seems to be making the difference. It's how do they manage data? Yeah. So like industrials, they might have other regulations they have to adhere to, but not a lot of data regulations. And it's really those that have to adhere to these data privacy laws that are doing very well on cyber.
Yeah. Well, listen, I am really interested in you know, I think this is such an important report, but I want to throw out here one last monkey wrench and give you a chance to sort of address this, because the hot issue that everybody's talking about is artificial intelligence.
Yes.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here and I'm going to say, look, as we see emerging sort of compliance and risk management programs developing, I think that cybersecurity is a really good precedent in terms of how things are being managed and how things and what are best practices. I urge people to start with this report because I think this is almost a pathway for AI as we see AI developing. In other words, having your chief information security officer, having compliance at the table, and seeing these governance recommendations and structures to me seems really interesting.
I would agree with you. I mean, look, there's a lot of really wonderful parallels between how you would oversee the risk of cyber and how you would oversee the risk coming from AI. And just to give you a couple of examples, right? So if you're a board member and you want to just start to wrap your arms around how are we handling data privacy? How are we handling data security? Well, then you start by asking those simple questions, things like, what data are we collecting? How do we store it? How do we maintain it? Why do we have it? What do we do with it? You know, how often are we patching our systems? How often are we updating our software and our hardware? You would do the same thing with AI. You know, start with a question of, where are we currently using AI today? How do we know? Because one of the things that happens for a lot of companies is they don't actually know how they're using AI because the employees are, for example, jumping on the free version of ChatGPT and typing in who knows what. Could be customer information, could be IP. Nobody knows. So it's very important to just start by asking some basic questions, which, you know, board members are really good at this. They're really good at asking these high level questions that then kind of send people scrambling to try to get the answers. And that's exactly the right thing to do. If this conversation has never started, start there. Start with, what are we doing today? How do we know? And what are our plans for the future? And how are we going to make sure that the plans that we have for the future around AI are being deployed in ways that build trust and don't erode trust? And I think if you just start simply, that's really important. And the same thing is true with cyber. So I think it's a good parallel.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, find out what you're doing with AI, but also find out, I call it the business use case. What is the case for it? Where are we going to use it? Then you got to go into the guts of the company and find out where it's being used or planned to being used. And one thing that's interesting, and this dovetails with the finding here with financial institutions, I think the leading users right now of AI in terms of fraud detection and other things are financial institutions.
And I think you're right. And they've been doing it for a very long time.
Exactly. And I think what's going to happen, like in many areas of compliance, is financial and regulated industries are going to set up best practices and people are going to then modify from there and apply them from there. So, well, Dottie, listen, thank you so much. I know I've kept you long and I threw you the monkey wrench question at the end about artificial intelligence and we didn't talk about that. But of course, as always, you handled it perfectly. Let me say, first off, thank you again. But if people want to get in touch with you to sort of follow up on this issue, to follow up on sort of the thought leadership coming out of Diligent, and how do they get in touch with you?
So lots of different ways, but I'll just say if they go to diligentinstitute.com, they can find all of our reports. They're all available for free to download, and we hope that they do and that they get good value out of them. And then you can easily find me on LinkedIn, Dottie Schindlinger. I should come up. I think I'm the only Dottie Schindlinger in the world. So that makes it pretty easy.
And you are one of a kind, Dottie, that's for sure, you know. Anyways, thank you again. We'll have show notes in there connecting to the report. And obviously, I'd urge everyone to get in touch with Dottie just to hear and connect through the Diligent Institute, which is amazing. And thank you again, Dottie. It was really terrific to have you.
Thank you so much, Michael. This was so fun.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkov, go to volkovlaw.com.